Welcome back to the DHF podcast. I'm Scott McNay, pastor at the La Plata Christian Church and board member at DHF. And with me today is Adam Hammerlink at First Christian Church Decatur, which is Decatur First Christian Church.
Whatever you want to call us.
Awesome. Great.
Whatever you want, man. You can call us whatever you want, Scott.
Yeah, good deal. Thanks for joining today, Adam. Adam is the pastor of missions and
Discipleship
there at Decatur First. And this is something that's been in the back of my mind for a while. Adam and I are in a pastor small group, and we end up in and out of this conversation about things that glue the church together, oversimplifications, and just other interesting points that come along with small groups. And it's been not just a vocational calling that he leads within, but also in doing some more schooling on the matter, always brings something new and enlightening to the conversation that I always pick up on, and it gives me something to think about during the week. So I thought a conversation just kind of to get things going, we won't be answering everything, about small groups in the life of the church would be helpful within our podcast. So I wanted to start off with the where did small groups come from? Okay, this isn't the phrase small groups and the devotion to the subject and writing and teaching at church conferences and leadership circles. Where did this take off, or how did it develop into what it is today?
Yeah, great question. First of all, I just want to say thanks so much, Scott. Appreciate you. And as you know, Scott, but maybe not everyone listening does, is I'm in my role here at First Christian Decatur because of DHF, and I joined what we've been in a group now for this 3 years.
Yeah,
a little cohort. Yeah, I think it was 2020, over 3 years now, maybe 3.5 years.
Yes.
Yeah,
yep.
And meeting weekly for almost 3.5 years straight, and it's been great. I was in a different role when we started, and kind of my connection with DHF led to where I am now, and I'm super thankful for it. And like many other pastors in that season of 2020 and 2021, it was kind of great just to have a group of guys to connect with and interact with. And you were way too kind. You said I bring insightful thoughts. I think other guys in our group would say contentious, but you can call me whatever you want. But it's been good, and I appreciate it. So, yeah, I think the role of a small groups and my role in discipleship is kind of where those things collide. And that's kind of the heart of your question in the conversation. But I mean, the history part of that, or like where did it begin? It's a good question. It's kind of hard to nail down, to be honest. I think, the Sunday school answer is, I mean, did Jesus lead a first small group? I mean, I guess it depends on what you mean by the word small group. It was a small group of people, you know, but what do you mean by small group, right? So I think that's where any theology of small groups or any theology of discipleship and small groups being part of that obviously connects its roots into like a New Testament Acts early church form of gathering, right? So I guess if you can start there, but then really what your question though is like specifically like how we view small groups or how we view it as a medium of discipleship or how we view it as a ministry or a program in the church. I think it comes from there's two place markers, I think, in a lot of like literature that you read. The first one's the Desert Fathers and Mothers, that when religion became, and Christianity specifically, became much more institutionalized and legalized, it became more corporate, right? So they would have used different words, of course, but for us, I think that's appropriate. And when that happened, for different reasons, not just because of the corporate nature of it, the Desert Fathers and Mothers, as we know, 3rd and 4th century, they retreat to the desert, they try to return back to just a different way of living, and they do so in smaller communities. Like they would have probably used the word community, not small group, but you know, they form these community groups. Some of the churches listening might call their small groups community groups, right? And that's what they formed. But it had to do with a way of life and a rule of life and gathering together and in those kind of settings. And so in one way, I think small groups kind of touches back to that kind of that kind of ecclesia thinking, right? That kind of thinking of the church. But I think the more specific, like modern understanding of small groups is like 1700s John Wesley. A lot of people, especially depending on their church background, they point to Wesley as the father of small groups, you know, and in late 1700s, he's kind of coming out with what he saw as like the, for our conversation today, I guess you can just call it, he called it like his three main like methods or mediums of expressions of the church, right? And he had societies, classes, and bands. That's what he called them. Society was like the corporate gathering, the large gathering, what we would probably call our worship service, like on a Sunday morning or something. He had classes, though, which were the small groups. It was they met together weekly. They would meet in evenings. There was confession of sin. There was accountability. There was a purpose for growing in holiness. And then the third category was bands, which was like what we would call at our church discipleship groups. It was three or four people that would get together regularly. It was usually same gender, and that was for the purpose of like growing deeper spiritually, having spiritual accountability, having growth-oriented conversations in a more like one-on-one, two-on-one, three-on-one kind of dynamic. So really the idea of classes, which is what we would call small groups, maybe wasn't originated by Wesley, but he's kind of, I guess, the father of that in a written form and a theological, he gave us theological framework for it that's really helpful. The Methodist movement then kind of indoctrinated our churches with what that could look like starting in the late 1700s. So that's probably the best like historical marker that can be helpful. Like basically you go back and look throughout the 1800s, a lot of people pointed back to how Wesley and the Wesleyans were doing these things called classes, what we now would call small groups.
Yeah. And for a while they shift into a lot of churches would be familiar with like Sunday school.
Yeah. Yeah.
And yeah. Churches still have Sunday school like we do, but
Or Bible studies, like those kind of the smaller gatherings of people, again, typically not on like the Sunday morning time slot, like a different, like an evening or something. I would say the difference though between like a Bible study or a Sunday school is that he was pretty specific in understanding classes as like smaller groups where like sin was being confessed and accountability was had. So it was not just for the purpose of knowledge intake or information. But it was an expression of the church. It had a component of church to it that was more than just information.
That's fascinating that element of what really embodies so much of Protestantism existed even back then. Like, how do I just get information? No, it's more than that. There's a relationship and a dynamic of our spiritual health is dependent upon our participation in this group. Not just in a information dump in our brain. So,
yeah.
So, what prevents small group implementation from succeeding?
From succeeding in the local churches? If you're asking, yeah. It's tough to give a specific answer. I think. For most of our local churches, at least let's speak specifically right to our DHF churches, right, that are a part of this. And Scott, you would know better than me being on the board, but a good majority of the DHF churches have been around a while. They have a longstanding history. They have very historic roots. There's lots of doctrinal connectivity to that. There's lots of theological implications of those historic roots and historic traditions. So there's definitely like barriers that we have to consider that are unique to our churches that have been around a long time, right? Like First Christian Decatur, where I am, right? We've been 189 years we've been around. There is 189 years of foundation that informs the culture that we have today or our context today. So anything that we were to implement, any kind of program, any kind of ministry, any kind of discipleship pathway, we just have to take that into consideration. And that's pretty important. I would give a different answer to this if we were talking about like new church plants than if we were talking about existing churches. But I think first of all, before I even specifically answer the question, I think one of the things that you have to know well, like when you're going to implement or successfully, you know, start up small groups in your church, is what is going to be the role of groups? Like what is going to be a small group to you? Right, like you said a second ago about the class stuff, right? Is small groups going to be a place where people receive information? Is it going to be a Bible study, right? Is it there's a leader that's going to share information with you? You're going to study the Bible and you're going to walk away knowing more about the Bible. Like, is that what a small group is going to be to you? I mean, I guess the question, like, what's your ecclesiology of small groups? What's your theology of small groups? Or, right, like, what kind of expression of the church is it going to be? You know, I think there's a couple different common approaches. One is where small groups can easily turn into like a Christian cul-de-sac. I have to be careful because sometimes when I say that, it comes across as like purely negative. I don't think that's purely negative. Right. It has like the community group kind of mentality, the life group, like these are my people. These are my friends. We've been in the same small group for 20 years, for 30 years. And like a cul-de-sac, it's like, well, there's no more room for anyone else. Like the only time anyone else moves to the cul-de-sac is when someone moves out. You know what I mean? And so I think small groups can quickly become that. And that's not a negative thing. It's just a reality to be aware of. And like, is that what you desire groups to be? Because a different way to view groups also is, well, groups are kind of a method for discipling people. Right. Groups are a method where people are going to learn about faith and learn about formation and be shaped more and more to the image of Jesus and to take spiritual truths and find ways to apply those to their life and to grow because of it. And if it is a part of your discipleship necessitates replication and multiplication, right? So where disciples are made, it is multiplying and is reproducing. So a cul-de-sac kind of mentality in that kind of a context can't work, right? Because, you know, that's where a lot of churches kind of find this rub, right? It's the, hey, we need more small groups to get more people in them, but no one wants to break up their small group or no one wants to, they like their small group. So, you know, right. You know, it's like a weird thing, right? And you really have to, I think, answer the question early on, not which one's right or which one's wrong, but which one's right for you. Like which one's right for your context, which one's right for what you're looking for. Because they can all be done well. But trying to do multiple things with a small group is where I think I've seen so many churches run into problems where it's like small groups is the magic thing that's going to take care of everything. Like small groups are the silver bullet. Small groups are the thing that it's going to be community for people. It's going to be pastoral care for people. Disciples are going to be made. New believers are going to be invited and come to faith. Neighbors are going to be saved. It's like, it's everything. Right. And like, okay, well, how's it going to be everything? I don't know. We're just going to give them a discussion guide. It's like, well, it's not going to become everything. So, so I think that's the first thing. It's like, you just need to be really clear of like, what is for us the role of small groups? Just be clear on that. So then, and then just a couple things I would say, because your question was implementation, right? Yeah. So a couple things. I think there's two barriers for, our churches specifically, existing churches that have been around a while and have historic roots. The first one is that small groups are going to seem like and sound like a new reiteration of something old, right? A common barrier for existing churches are that they've seen this before. We did Sunday school. Yeah, 10 years ago, we had that Pastor Jim and he started life groups at his house, you know, and then those went away and then he changed the name to community groups. So then they became home groups and then they became small groups. It's like, we've seen this before. We've tried this before. We've done this thing for 10 years. I was in a group, you know, it's a new reiteration of something old. It's familiar. And you could use that to your advantage, or that could work to your disadvantage because you're trying to create a new DNA, a new missional purpose with your groups.
Right.
You just have to be really aware that like, if you're trying to implement this thing, you need to recognize, especially if your church has been around a while, like many other churches have, that this is not the first time they've ever heard of a small group. This is not the first time they've heard of at least the role of this expression of the church. So you just got to be aware of that. You have to lead with that in mind. You can't just ignore that reality. It's every pastor's least favorite phrase, right? It's the, we did that before, or we've tried that once. It's like, we all hate hearing it, but we have to hear it to be able to lead well because of it. So,
right.
So just owning that, acknowledging that, casting really clear vision of why what you're talking about is different. Like, why is this different than what they're thinking of? Or how is this going to be served differently than how it's served before? And just to have to be really clear about what they are and pilot them well too. You know, like start out a couple of them, you know, and instead of saying, hey, our whole church, we're going to start small groups, sign up for one. It's like, what if you just start one and do that for 6 months and people start to see what it is. And then those people in your group that were in your group for 6 months, identify four of those 10 people and have them go start their own at this new launch thing that you're doing or whatever. Now you have five groups and the leaders of all five of those groups have the DNA that you're looking for. I think you're going to have more success with that in that kind of a manner. And then the other one too, we already kind of said a little bit, is just that if you're not careful, it's going to become a Christian cul-de-sac, whether you think it will or not. If you don't intend for that to happen, and if you don't plan for it not to happen, it will happen. Right. People like each other. That's the point. Like we want people to like each other, and we want people to do life together.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you just got to be ready for, like, unless you do something to prevent it.
Yeah.
If you want to prevent it, not saying you have to, but if you want to prevent it, it will become a cul-de-sac where they're like, well, we don't want to leave our friends. We don't want to break up. We don't want to split up. We don't want to, whatever word they would use. And so you just got to be aware of how are you going to create a DNA of reproducing, if that's what your goal for groups will be, is that disciples are being made, groups are reproducing, new people are becoming leaders, and we're reaching more neighborhoods and more part of our city. And if that's what you want, you just have to be really aware of that, or it won't succeed because people aren't going to want to split. They're going to be like, someone else go lead the new group. We like our people. Or I've been in churches where it's like, we don't want to leave our friends. So like one of us is just going to be in two groups. We'll lead another group and still be in honor with their friends. Well, that's a great idea in theory, but 6 months in, they don't want to have two commitments every Sunday night or something, you know? And, so there's a couple things I can think of.
Yeah. And I think that's really, a large part of the rub with getting small groups going or multiplying small groups is leadership. Whether that is, with a class, we think of a teacher who's conveying all the information. Within small groups, sometimes, I've heard it put more of a like coach-based model with curriculum that does a lot of the heavy lifting. But then they have to field questions or lead the discussion. And so whether it comes to how much weight is on their shoulders to carry, or at a bare minimum, how do you go about cultivating small group leaders? Or a network of small groups in your church, or a church of small groups, however you're working it.
Yeah, I think when it, so let's, I heard a couple of things there. So like, maybe I'll take the leader part first, right? Is the, with a small group leader, again, I think you have to make sure that your equipping and training of that leader is specific to the model and philosophy of small groups that you are choosing.
Right.
That's really important. It sounds so obvious, but I think I've seen it done differently, where it's like, hey, we want small groups to be a place where discipleship happens. But then the way they train the small group leaders by like giving them a pre-written discussion guide and saying good luck. It's like, well, if you're giving apostolic authority to this small group, you need to be raising up apostolic leaders, you know, not just a point person. So it really just, it depends on what your thinking is. I think a lot of us, like a lot of our churches, at least where we are right now, is probably in the model of small groups are a way to have sermon-based discussions with people to find application from the Sunday morning or the weekend teaching, right? Like that's kind of, not specific. That's not like a exclusively, but that's a good, that's a kind of a short definition of how we kind of treat our small groups now here, at least, is that the majority of our small groups is a space where people can find life application from weekend teaching. And throughout the year, we do different series where people are all in. So like all of our small groups are doing the exact same thing. We send them pre-written discussion guides to all the leaders. We have do videos, you know, like we do record videos here. We send them out. We do that a few times throughout the year. And then the rest of the year, we use different resources like a Right Now Media or something like that.
Interesting.
And that kind of a model of small groups, how we treat it is we are resourcing the leaders. I want to resource them both how to navigate common conversations, right? Like how do you navigate the person who likes to domineer a conversation? Like if you've led a small group for more than 2 weeks, you're going to have to figure out how to get the person in the room that likes to talk to take up less of the oxygen, right?
Absolutely.
And also on the other end, how are you going to, I'm that guy, by the way, in case you can't tell already. I guess you're interviewing me. What am I talking about? I can talk as much as I want. On the other end too, how do you engage the person in the conversation that's sitting in the back seat, right? Like they're blending into the couch. They're, you know, falling away. Often those are men, at least in the groups I've been a part of, you know, their wives will speak up real quick, but the men don't really say much. And it's like, you know, hey, Matt, like, what did you think about, you know, what Brian said this week? And whatever that, you know, interaction is. So teaching them how to do those things, resourcing them on how to, like, so whenever we get together as all of our leaders, we do some training stuff on that specific thing. But then it's resourcing them throughout the series. So again, I'm sending them advanced discussion guides and I'm sending them videos. And if there's something specific coming up in the week, the head's teaching, like preparing them for that if need be. And then throughout the other months where a lot of our groups continue all year round, they don't just kind of go with our cycle of series and things. We'll launch new groups with certain series so that like new people can start a new group from scratch, because it's really hard to jump into an existing group. We've learned that the hard way. It's really hard to get people connected to existing groups. A lot of reasons. I guess we could talk about that, but it's really hard. And so we launch new groups pretty regularly, 3 or 4 times a year. And but for our existing groups, a lot of them meet throughout the year. So we have Right Now Media, we have as a church. It's a great resource for them to use. Some of them other use different resources that are out there. There's a billion options out there of, you know, basically canned curriculum or material that basically can be fodder and fuel for conversation. Because that's how we structure our groups. So to your question about the leader, in that kind of a group setting, you just need a good point person. Mm-hmm. Like that person's not you're not releasing that person as a pastor to these people. They might be a shepherd in some sense of the word pastor, but they're not the apostolic leader. They're not, you know, they're not the one that's teaching or baptizing or doing sacraments or communion, whatever, you know, for most of these groups. They're just getting together for conversation around the teaching for application and trying to grow in their faith. So you need a great point person. We actually use the acronym POINT. For our leaders, POINT. Some people maybe have seen that before, but P is for a people person, right? You got to like people. You're not going to be a very good point person in a group if you don't like people. You got to be openly hospitable, right? You need to be able to like welcome people in well. You need to open them to your home. You need to be able to inclusive, eyes inclusive towards all. Like, be good at welcoming everyone. Don't just connect with your friends. Like, be aware of everyone in the room. In not domineering. You're not the teacher. You're not the leader of the conversation. You're just the person steering the conversation. And then T for teachable spirit. Like, you too have to realize, like, you don't have all the information. You're there to learn with them. Like, I'm a peer in this experience. And I think if a good point person kind of does all those things well, and then just navigates the conversation. And
So when it comes to, is the way you go about finding new leaders, do you put that out there for people to step up, or do you tap shoulders?
Yeah, it's a good question. So for us, this is something that we do now. I think it's something that we are putting more energy towards doing more so of, is the it's kind of the apprenticeship pathway of leadership. Okay. You know, it's trying to ask questions in our small group settings, our mentorship group settings, you know, because we have a couple different things. I know right now we're just talking about small groups, but in that kind of a space, asking the question of like, hey, who's the leader in making in this space? Or like, who's the leadership capacity person here? The person that has potential to be a leader. Who are you apprenticing to be a leader? Like, who's someone that's hungry for it, receptive to it? You see the gifts in them. How are you calling out those gifts? Having those I see in you conversations, like, hey, I see that people gravitate towards you. Hey, you're a great people person. Hey, you're great at making people feel welcome. Hey, you're great at like kind of helping people steer the conversation. Hey, you have such a humble spirit about how you have interaction with people, and you're so very articulate. I think you'd be great at like hosting a group of people. And I think you'd be great at, every time I see you, you're like inviting new friends into stuff, whatever. I think you'd just be great at hosting something in your house or whatever it might be. And having those kind of conversations, then apprenticing them with you. So, hey, well, join Adam's group for this, you know, 6-week run of this group. And then after these 6 weeks, Adam's group's going to continue, and you can go hop in and go launch your own group at that next kickoff as well. Yeah. So we'll pretty regularly, when we launch new groups, we'll have people showing up to that launch that are ready to lead a new group. So they're like, you've been through a group with someone else, and they're like, hey, I want to lead a new group now. Or they've been meeting with me or something like that, and they're ready now to take on their own group. And they'll sometimes show up with a couple or two people that they've brought from their last group or that they have personally invited into the group. And then they show up at our launch kind of ready to take in a few people that, because people show up to our launches and they have no idea who they're going to leave there with, but they leave that day with their group, when they're going to meet the first time and where they're going to meet that first time. And who the point person will be for that first week. Even if there's no point person showing up ready to be a point person, they're leaving ready to be a point person. So that's kind of how we launch our groups. Yeah.
Okay. And let me, you know, not to like launch just straight into failure. But in talking to other people about starting small groups, and so many of their groups just don't take off. They don't have the cohesion to last a while. In my take on all that is, that's probably okay. That just sometimes groups don't have something fundamental and you try again. How do you handle a group that just doesn't hang together? Or that poor, that small group leader who's like trying. And it's not because of the lack of effort, because this person really pulled everything they could together. It just, it didn't work.
Yeah.
That's something that happens consistently. Is that an outlier? How do you coach leaders through that to try and not give up?
Yeah, this is a really good question. I considered saying something about this to your question earlier about implementation, but I know it gets a little dicey and contextual, so I didn't know if we'd have time for it. I'll do a brief swipe at it, but it definitely happens, right? Like, our retention rate of new groups that launch isn't 100%, right? You know, we wish it was 100%, but it's not. And again, right now, I'm just going to assume we're talking specifically about the small groups that are the groups that get together. They usually stay together for at least months, if not years, and engaging Sunday morning teaching for application purposes. It's not like a reproducing kind of multiplying environment. In those kind of a settings, right, unless you're doing something specific, you're probably just receiving whoever's interested in being in a group. You're personally inviting people into a group. So it might be life stage, it might be multi-generational, it might be multicultural. It could be various things. And you quickly realize, like, oh, it's a social engagement here now. Like, this is a social setting. Mm-hmm. It's a communal space, but doesn't have all the DNA of a church, right? So, like, it doesn't have all the mission, the missiology and mission of the church. It doesn't have all the sacrament and expression of the church, but it's a part of the church. So we're diverse enough, but we're diverse enough to not necessarily get along as best friends either. Like, you're not my peer group or my social group, but we're kind of treating the space like a social group. So you just get like natural differences in relationships and dynamics. And so we just embrace it for us right now. Like, we've accepted that this is how we see groups and this is what groups are. So we own it at our launches. We talk about it. We're like, hey, the reason we do all of our launches in like a 6 week or 5 week segment, like, we'll launch to say we have a new series that's happening that we want everyone to be a part of. All of our existing groups will be a part of it. And we're going to launch a new group on that Sunday. So, like, on that Sunday, right after that service, stick around after service, and we're doing a group launch. You're going to hear about what a group launch is, what your commitment is. You're going to meet the people in your group, who your point person is, where you're meeting this week. Hmm. We own it. Like, hey, it's a 6 week series. That means at the end of 6 weeks, you have a get out of uncomfortable small group jail pass free, right? Like, it's in 6 weeks, if you're like, these aren't my people, that's okay. Like, we own that. We accept that. It is what it is, because this is kind of how we view the role of small groups in our model.
Yeah.
And giving that freedom has been a lot better, because our retention rate of groups sticking around is higher. It just means some people might bounce around. So it's not uncommon for us to do a small group launch at the end of the summer. That group sticks together, but someone that was in that group comes back to a different small group launch in the fall because that just wasn't the right group for them. And for those kind of people, it usually takes two or three attempts, and then they find that group that sticks and it works. Another thing too that I would just say is there's some great intended point people, some great intended leaders of groups. They don't have all the POINTs to lead a group well. So maybe co-lead with someone, right? Like a really important one to lead a group well, especially if you're meeting in homes, is being openly hospitable. And I heard a guy say once that the gift of hospitality is not just you want people to come to your house, it's they want to come to your house too. There's a lot of people that love to host, but no one wants to go to your house. So,
right.
Like, especially now, that might be different in other parts of the world, but here in the West, right? Like, we don't like dirty places. We don't want your dog and cat hair all over us, like, whatever it is, you know, like, maybe I'm just germaphobe talking here. So, maybe there's just things like that, intangibles that are sometimes hard to nail down. So we just own it from the beginning. We're like, hey, this might feel awkward. You don't know these people. They're strangers to you. If it doesn't work out in 6 weeks, you get to walk away scot-free and it's on me. You know what I mean? Like, you get to walk right away and there's a clear break for your group at the end of those 6 weeks. And majority of our groups stick together. But it's not 100% retention for sure.
Yeah, I think that's smart because it just takes the edge off the leader and the group and the participant to just say, hey, I can find the right group that I connect with. I don't have to shoehorn my experience into whoever out of convenience. Well, this is the group. I have to stick with this. Because then I think it also peels a person off of your church if they feel the pressure, like, well, that didn't work out and I can't show my face there again. Like, there's so many bits of wisdom along in that that I think is really brilliant.
Yeah. Can I say something, Scott?
Yeah.
Yeah. Can I say something? I don't know why I asked. I knew you were going to let me. Can I say something? I want to answer. It was part of your question earlier too, but I wanted to say that stuff first. But I think it was important. You made the question about you said something along the lines of a church made up of small groups, like a church with small groups. Like, what's the difference there? How does that work? And I think this is part of it too, right? So I know we've talked a lot so far about like kind of like a common understanding of what a small group is, like this group of people that usually meet in a home. They usually meet weekly. It's usually 10 to 15 people. They have a leader. There's usually discussion guides. They're watching a video of some kind, whether the church produces it like we often do, or they're using some Right Now Media, Lifeway, whatever kind of resource. And they get together. They usually have a meal maybe, or just snacks. They talk, they watch a video. They talk about the stuff. They pray together. And that's kind of what group is. That's what most churches, small groups model look like. And that's great. That's fine. It's really beneficial. My wife and I benefited from that for years, right? I think there's other things. Like if you were to talk big picture discipleship pathway, then you need to have other things on your pathway that supplement the ecclesiological, the missiological needs of the church that kind of a small group doesn't solve, right? Like, so we have mentorship groups here also. We have discipleship groups here also. We have some different outreach things that we do also that kind of complement and supplement, which is why small groups is not like a magic bullet, right, for us. Or silver bolt for us. But the another way of thinking about groups, right, to the point where like, that's what a church with small groups looks like. There's also some churches that function as, hey, we're a church made up of small groups. Like, we are a church of small groups. I've seen lots of different models of this. A really good example, if there's anyone listening that wants to check it out, there's it's called Church Project. Church Project, they're out of Houston. I think technically it's Woodlands, Texas, I think, like just north of Houston. I was actually there a couple years ago. And the Houston Church Planting Network. And this is a really cool church. The guy that leads it's really, really dynamic, a leader, like high capacity kind of leader. Like he led one of the fastest growing churches in the country. His story is he kind of got disillusioned a little bit with like the mega church, fast growing church world. And he just needs something different for himself. And he started this thing called Church Project. And they call themselves a church of house churches. Now, again, I know the word house church has lots of like loaded language. So like we could talk about that for forever. But essentially, a church of small groups is kind of how they see themselves. Now, they still look like on the outside what our churches might look like. I mean, it's a huge building, huge facility. It was actually used to be like an NHL like training rink, a training facility, is not like their church building. It's a crazy story. The church is really cool. They have very few staff members. They have like 10,000 people that come to like a worship service, but they have like only a handful of staff members. But the way they operate is like, hey, we don't do like centralized ministry. Like they don't have a youth group. They don't have like kids ministry. They don't have like that. Like they see themselves as a church of small groups, which is where they, everyone that's part of their church is connected throughout the week in some, a group and a home somewhere. And they kind of have like three things. They call it, they say distributed, what is it? Distributed pastoral leadership. So like they have a pastor, but they treat all their small group leaders like the pastors. Like, hey, right. You're a pastor of the 15 people that meet in your house every week. You're their pastor.
Right.
So they're not equipping and training small group leaders. They're equipping and training lay pastors of these
homes.
That
comes into effect what you were talking about earlier about apostolic authority. That is
exactly
a scenario like this.
Yeah, that's an apostolic small group, right? They are releasing, because the other thing too that they say they're decentralized from a primary place and priest, right? Like they don't have a church building. They have homes that are churches for these people throughout the week. And then they had diverse discipleship communities that gather geographically. So they're not like, hey, we want to be with a bunch of other people our age, or we have some friends we want to invite into our group. It's like, hey, no, you want to be in a group? They have like this, they developed an app even. It's crazy what they do, but like depending on where you live in the city, you're a part of the group that's nearest to your address. Which is really cool in a city like Houston because it's so diverse in so many different ways. So their groups are so interesting. And they still have a worship service on a weekend that would feel like a common larger church worship service. But they make it very clear that, like, if you're there and you're not in one of these small groups, you feel uncomfortable. Like, they're pretty clear the whole time of, like, hey, we're a church of house churches. So if you're just here on the weekend, you're missing the point. This isn't what this is all about. This is just where we come together to worship God together. Where church really happens is in all these, however many, is 200 something homes throughout the week. And it's pretty cool. It's pretty cool what they do. And but again, that's just a different way of, like, that's an extreme example, of course.
Sure.
I could give you, there's a similar example near us, near where we are now, in Delavan, Illinois. And it's a small town here in central Illinois. And they have a similar kind of model where they still get together for the weekend. They have a church building. It's been around a while. But they really treat, like, their church as though church is really what happens in our homes throughout the week. And that's just kind of the model their pastor has led with. And it's just kind of cool to see. It's a different way of thinking about small groups. And I think there's in-betweens too. Those are the two extremes. But I just thought it was worthwhile sharing as we're talking about it. I think that's kind of, this is an example of why I think it's important to know, like, what is a small group going to be for us, and how are we going to treat it? So
when it comes down to, like, future or other resources that if someone wants to chase this rabbit trail down, any books out there, podcasts that you find interesting and be worth mentioning?
Yeah.
I mean, it's pretty well written about.
Yeah, I was about to say, are there any books, are there any spaces where books are not filled with? Yeah.
Right,
there's so many.
Something that you find interesting. Let's not just go with, like, everybody in the conversation enjoys. What do you enjoy? Like, what jumps out at you in a conversation?
Okay, yeah, I got a... Here we go, just a second. I'll grab it.
Yeah.
I have a stack. I like my books just all over my office, the problem. This one I was rereading through recently. It's called Replicate by Robbie Galati. He's a cool dude. It's forwarded by Robert Coleman, which, you know, the guy that wrote Master Plan for Evangelism. And, but kind of this book gives a model for a discipleship group, like a, he calls it Discipleship Blueprint. So it's a form of a small group, but it's, again, it's like a different kind of thinking. But you can implement some of this into small group kind of DNA. It's like, how do you make disciples, release disciples, reproduce disciples in different settings? That's really helpful. I really like that book. Just how do you shape a culture, basically, of disciple making? And another one that I recently read, this one's a little bit more heady. I guess it's heavy on theology because it's more of a theology book than not, but it's really helpful for thinking about discipleship and small groups because it's called A Church for Every Context. I think the guy's name is, like, Michael Moynagh, something like that, M-O-Y-N-A-G-H. But it's called Church for Every Context. It's like an introduction to theology and practice of ministry, something like that. And basically, he gives you really helpful, like, biblical basis, a theology of your mission, right? Your missiology, your ecclesiology. How should that play out in small groups? How do we biblically think about small groups? How do we biblically think about different expressions of our church and different expressions of the church? That was really helpful. Then a couple of really popular ones, Making Small Groups Work is a great resource. It's been around a while. That's Henry Cloud and John Townsend.
Okay.
That one's really good. Leading Small Groups by Chris Surratt. It's kind of a pretty common one as well. Chris Surratt's pretty well known in this space. Also, there's a lot of them, but
yeah.
First few that come to mind. I mean, I got even another book right here. Different. This is actually more of, like, the book Church Out of Texas I was telling you about, but this is called The House Church. And again, to be very clear, house church is a very loaded word. So I know that even when I hear the word house church, my ears go up, like, hold on, what are we talking about here?
Right.
But it gives some helpful language around how is a small group an expression of the church, you know? And I think that's, come back to where we started. I think that's what Wesley's thing all was, is like, hey, this is the classes, these smaller groups. It's not a separate thing. It's not just a program of the church. It's an expression of the church. It's a vital part of our spiritual formation.
Yeah.
And so scripture should inform how we approach it, how we view it, and how we treat it. So,
yeah. Good deal. Well, Adam, I really appreciate you joining me on the podcast today and give us something to think about
this
week, and take back to our churches and work out together as a community. We appreciate everybody tuning in. And if you have an idea for us you'd like us to chase down or think about or have a conversation on, just let us know over at the website. And we will catch you later. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Scott.